Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Before we start this week, Ruth, the return by popular demand of the quirky bit.
Popular demand?
Well, mildly popular demand. Quirky bit, where we test the levels with a lame joke. So I thought what I'd treat you to is probably my favourite joke of all time.
That is a bold claim, because if you don't know, you are old. So you've seen a lot of jokes, you know?
I've heard and seen lots and lots of jokes. And my favourite is two monkeys sitting in the bath. And one goes, whoo, 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 and the other one says, put a bit of cold in. So there you are, one of my favourite jokes of all time.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nothing was going to live up to that intro,
no,
though, was
I
it?
Probably so I think I probably oversold it.
Mm. So welcome, this is Ruthie, Uni Dad and me. I'm Ruthie.
And I'm Dad.
And this is you.
and you're and you've flown over from York University, where you're studying French and Spanish, to be with us.
Yeah, you know, well, I didn't even realise. My actual degree title, I think, this year is French, Spanish and Linguistics.
Mm.
But who knew? I thought I was just doing French and Spanish. Mm. And funnily enough, it makes sense because I did not go to my linguistics lecture this week.
You didn't? Why not? Because we were talking about linguistics last week and saying that you're finding it
It's so dull. But this week, a lecture captured it. Do you know what lecture capture is?
No.
It's changed the game for people who do subjects like politics or English literature, where it's heavy like lecture things, whereas I do one lecture a week, it's mostly seminars, it doesn't really affect me that much. But they film every lecture and you can just watch them online. Right. So a lot of people barely ever go to lectures because there's no need. And you can also speed up. So if you've got a lecturer who speaks really slowly, you can play it on double speed and get through the lecture in half the time.
I'm sure they'd be flattered. If they were speaking so slowly, you could. That's probably for a reason, isn't it? It's probably because of something that's
Some of them are just not good orators.
Hmm.
I think. Mine are decent. They're fine. I've only got one lecturer, so I won't really know.
So what's been going on with you?
What's been going on? Had a good week-ish, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's weird, because so I am in my third week of this new term, and the first 2 weeks were, like, great or whatever. Well, the first week was exam week, but I only had a couple of days of exams, so then it was quite fun, just like quite a lot of chilling out or whatever. And then second week again, it's still that like freshers feeling of, oh, like we're back, the novelty's still there and stuff. And then I felt quite, not low, but just had quite a dip this week, I felt, and quite which I've not felt in ages.
You should have phoned us.
Well, yeah, because I have been like missing home actually a bit this week, or like missing kind of being at home and you guys, and then also like friends from home and stuff, which is weird because I've not really felt like that in ages. Like, didn't feel like that at all at the end of the term or anything, then didn't feel it in the first couple of weeks. But I think it's just like the more stuff settles into like actually living there, the more kind of like you do have little low moments or whatever. And also, I think part of it was Blue Monday this week, which is statistically the saddest day.
Well, it's nonsense.
That's nonsense?
Yes, I think it's a marketing tool. I think it's the lowest day because Christmas and everything is finished.
3rd January. But I think there is something to be said about the 3rd... Sorry, 3rd January, 3rd Monday. I think there is something to be said in that the 3rd Monday is like, yeah, the new year, that fresh feeling you had of, oh, I'm going to achieve all these things, it's kind of died down, and you realise that, in fact, it will not be an ordinary particular year.
The actual concept of Blue Monday is invented by marketing companies to try and sell whatever it is they want to sell you on, which probably be
Well, for me, I felt very Blue Monday.
Yeah, it'll be. But it'd be Blue Tuesday as well, and probably Blue Friday. Yeah, this time of the year is, don't forget, for people who are self-employed like myself, you've got your tax coming up, you'll pay your tax by the end of January, so that's something.
Do I have to pay tax?
I'm not an expert. So far, I've never been employed by the HMRC.
My main thing, if one day I get married, if anyone wants to marry me, numbers, they'll have to be good at numbers, because I don't want to have to do that.
There are professionals, but then
I don't want to have to employ an accountant.
Yeah.
And I think it's also a thing of when you're at university, it's like very much very big highs, kind of quite lonely lows or whatever, just because...
But you had your friends, your college friends,
that was lovely. It was nice. I think sometimes you need friends to come and stay, or like, so my brother's coming to visit on Saturday, like not in a big way or anything, just to remind you that a world exists outside of the university, especially being on a campus, which I do think is actually like better for you in general, like moving to university and stuff, living on campus for the first year. But I do kind of think, yeah, you need someone to be like, the world exists outside of this little bubble that you've created, of going to seminars and stuff. Like, I've spoken to a few of my friends on the phone who do apprenticeships and stuff, and it's nice to hear actually about different lives, because it can be a bit insular where you're all experiencing like much the same things. And I think that makes you have this like weird FOMO thing as well, that is like, oh, what is everyone else doing? Because we're all in this tightly packed like place or whatever. What I've been thinking about is that university is this like insular thing where you're all not to say that I'm not absolutely enjoying it loads, which I am, this insular thing where you're all talking to each other and planning things together and that kind of thing. I was scrolling through Twitter and things, there's a play that someone wrote, and I've never read it, but this is a really good line about how we should all get off our phones, and I just thought I would read it for you. We are suspended from the belly of satellites, sculling in space and chatter. I'm sorry, but sometimes I will go silent because I want to belong to myself for a while. I will move out of this instant city, charge reality real. I won't wave to you from fields of mornings and mists. I will just be in them. I think one of the things that our generation is really bad at is spending time alone, because even when you're on your own, you can be scrolling through things and you're not truly on your own. And then when I've come to university, because I'm with people so often, because you're around all your mates and stuff, and like I'll either be working with course friends or spending time with my flatmates or whatever, there's always someone around. You then have very little time alone, and even in those times alone, you're then also scrolling through your phone. And I think that sometimes it can foster this like burnout in university students, because you're literally turned on all the time and you don't get to... I like the line where it was like, I want to belong to myself for a while or whatever. I think that was really like... I read that and I was like, oh yeah, when I'm going to make a real effort, like in the next coming weeks or whatever, and I'll tell you about it, when I'm on my own, to like actually be on my own rather than
doing what I do at the moment. You know, even adults who aren't at university, you don't really get a lot of time to be on your own, you know, to be actually, I know what you're saying, to actually just walk
to be
down,
fully,
to be fully alone. You don't,
and even like, my alone time, I want to try and do like reading or listening to music. I think listening to music is good, rather than like watching stuff on TV or like watching YouTube or something like that, because I just think that I used to when I was at home, but now I really don't. And I do think it would be healthier to actually just like zone out, even if it's for like 40 minutes or something. Yeah. I don't think it needs to be a long time. I'm quite a social person anyway, but I think it would be quite good.
Well, good luck with that. And do let us know how it goes. You were telling me before about things like pole dancing, which is meant to be...
Cheerleading and pole dancing.
Now, these two things are meant to be... They've sort of changed in a way.
Yeah, they were originally things... So pole dancing was like a kind of form of stripping in a lot of ways. And absolutely.
And cheerleading.
It was a performance for men, generally.
And also cheerleading.
And also cheerleading to cheer on
But now
male football teams in America.
But now they've been sort of reversioned.
But now they've been a bit reclaimed
as empowering things. But you're not buying it.
I'm not 100% buying it, but right. So I understand the draw of them a lot, and so because there's a pole fitness, it's called
pole fitness
because it is different that they run at the uni, which. Been like tempted to go to ever because it is an like incredible form of fitness. You do get really fit, and a lot of like girls who do it say it's like just so much fun because it's all girls. A lot of times, it's just that environment is really fun, and it's exercise that doesn't feel like exercise too much. And so, you know, I can absolutely see the appeal and see how it would make you feel good or whatever. And the same thing with cheerleading, difficult sport but looks really fun. Pom poms look great,
but yeah.
There's a part of me that does just think, is it actually empowering or is it still just kind of demeaning? And it's the same, it brought me back to when we discussed ring girls, and I don't ever want to be someone who's like so feminist that like, oh, ring girls or podium, not podium girls, the ones at Formula One, I've forgotten what they're called.
Yeah, they're called grid girls.
Grid girls, yeah.
And also the darts, they're more sort of podium girls.
Yeah, that kind of thing. I don't want to ever be one of those people who's like, my feminism doesn't include any of that. Like, I think that's too by the book, and it's just too much. Like, with the cheerleading, they say, you know, it's a sport, it's physical, and they do competitions for it. How, you know, it's not just about...
No, it's very
it's not just
in
about
America,
it's massive in America. They do competitions of it. It's not just about the cheering on of the sports teams. A lot of times it's that is the sport. But it still is what it is. Do you know what I mean? It is this thing that...
It's not got quite the sleazy reputation that it used to have, because
no.
I know when when one of your sisters, a long, long time ago, it was a sort of early-ish days of the internet. One of your sisters watched a film. There's a famous film, isn't
Bring
that,
It actually? On.
Yeah, Bring It On, whatever it was.
That's definitely the film.
That'll be the film.
It's very famous.
Got really interested. They were at high school at the time. Got really interested in cheerleading, and said to me because. As I recall, we just had dial-up internet at home.
My God!
Yes, long time.
The 1800s.
See how you were the privileged one.
Yeah.
We just had dial-up internet at home. Said when you go into work, and this was at the BBC, could you print off some stuff about cheerleading for me? And of course, I put a search on cheerleading.
Gosh, this was definitely Anna.
I don't know which one it was, but anyway, they wanted to do a project on cheerleading, and I obviously went onto the computer at work. Put in cheerleading and got all sorts of pictures, which were, you know, not the sort of stuff a middle-aged man should be looking at. And it was just at that moment that the boss came around, looked at my screen, and there were all these cheerleaders. So in those days, it wasn't something that was in any way respectable.
No, and I think it is very much now.
But you're still writing...
I don't know, part of it just doesn't quite sit right. I don't want to be doing a sport where... The real reason you're doing it is to cheer on other people playing a sport.
I know what you mean.
There's a part of me that is like, yeah, absolutely, pole fitness sounds great fun, but I also don't want to...
You're not signing up for it.
I don't know. No, I probably won't, but also because I've got literally no hand-eye coordination or rhythm, so that would be my main...
Just to pick up on something we talked about last week, which was the Meghan Harry thing, and the fact that a lot of people were saying...
It's already died down so much, don't you think?
Yes, it has. Who cares, really? But, people still do care, because it's still in the newspapers all the time. But, as you say, it's died down a wee bit from last week. But when a lot of people were saying it's racism that's driven them out, and my view was that this is not a specifically racist country. It's not a very racist country.
Did you watch the, I think it was Afua Hirsch on
the Piers... She's been on my show. Afua
Hirsch,
she's
on
good,
the Piers
like
Morgan
her.
Thing.
Yeah, she's very smart.
Yeah, she... Well, yes. She know what she says.
I know what she says, but she's entitled to...
But also the way she was treated on... If it was her, I really hope it was.
It was Afua Hirsch.
Yeah, the way she was treated on the Piers Morgan programmes.
Well, I never saw any of that. But what I did see was Question Time. And I saw Lawrence Fox, who sort of re-energised this row. And he was arguing with some woman in the audience who was a lecturer in race studies or whatever. Mm. So she clearly had a very specific point that it was racism. And he was a bit like me in that he wasn't... All he had was his own general feeling that it wasn't racist and that this isn't...
inclined to agree with someone who's a lecturer in race studies.
Well, yes, you would, but it doesn't mean that his view is any less valid, and he's got 100,000 new Twitter followers.
I would say that someone's view is more valid if they've dedicated their life to learning about
their
something.
Life, or maybe
if you're a lecturer in something, that means you've done like 10 years plus of study into one aspect. Like, I'm
listen. No, it doesn't mean that at all.
Yeah, it will.
No, it means she probably got a degree in English or history or politics or one of those things.
Yeah, but if she's then a lecturer in race studies, she'll have to done a master's and a PhD in race studies.
I don't even know if she is a lecturer in race studies, but she's she's a race studies professional. She's a professional in that area. And therefore, her job's finished.
No, but I'm just saying that if you are a lecturer in something, your point is more valid than someone with a general feeling.
No, I think his point is quite valid.
But would you say that in any argument, that someone's point is not more valid if they're like a professor of something?
No, I have to say...
A professor in economics is not more valid than... someone with a general feeling.
So you're putting me into the sort of Brexit category. We don't need experts anymore.
Well, what I mean?
No, that's fair enough. But I think in this case, in this particular argument, he's perfectly entitled to express his opinion. But of course, people piled in on him, mainly because he's posh. He's a posh actor. He's the son of either James Fox or Edward Fox, some well-known actor from movies in the 70s.
Understand.
Yeah, they're posh. He's a posh guy.
And what did he say?
More or less the same as me. He said this is a lovely country. And whereas
lovely country for some people.
It's a lovely, he said it's a lovely country, and he doesn't think that what Meghan and Harry are doing is motivated by racism. It's probably motivated by all sorts of other things.
I don't think what Meghan and Harry are doing is motivated by racism. They're turning away from like royal service or whatever. I don't think that's motivated by racism. I'm saying that the backlash that they've had has racist undertones.
Mm. Well, we'll leave that argument because I wanted to speak more about poshness and the prejudice against poshness.
Oh, those poor posh people.
I like posh people. I used to have an old Etonian who read the news on my radio show, and we had great fun.
No, there's absolutely nothing wrong with posh people, but posh people not accepting their, not recognising their privilege is...
Yeah, but then what we're saying is posh people like Lawrence Fox haven't got a right to talk about anything.
No,
She used the phrase...
We've got an Etonian in power.
Yeah, but she reduced
the phrase... We've had two in the past.
Well, we've had loads and loads.
Yeah, I know, but the living
Winston
memory...
Winston Churchill, we had an old Etonian who won the Second World War.
Well, but even the past three prime ministers, two have been ex-Bullingdon Club members. I don't think posh people are having that many problems in expressing their viewpoints.
No, you're right, but just to move it away from whether they can express their opinions, this is an interview with Edward Kemp, who's the director of the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art, RADA, and it probably actually supports your view that you weren't going to carry on with your acting career, because as we've mentioned on the podcast before, you were in plays when you were younger. Because with your Leeds accent, according to this, you'd have absolutely no chance.
No hope. What does he say?
Well, what he's saying is this criticism that the British film industry is stuffed with posh, privately educated actors. He's actually defending this to some extent. He's saying that the Downton Abbey effect, because Downton Abbey has been so popular selling it to other countries, because of that effect, it means that many of Britain's upper crust actors are simply writer for some roles than other less well-heeled ones. So in other words, a lot of the roles being suggested for British actors, if you like, and there's things like The Crown as well.
Yeah, you just have to have that voice.
You've just got to be...
And it's much easier to find someone with that voice than to get someone to... Yeah. So, like, Claire Foy, she's Mancunian, and she played the Queen in The Crown, but doesn't have barely a Mancunian accent at all. Mm. And so then it's like...
Yeah,
she's a regional actor, but...
Not really. She doesn't sound like Liam Gallagher, then.
She doesn't sound like Liam Gallagher. No. I think it's massively sad that there's not more parts for regional actors. But then also, then you have this thing of, like, the things that regional actors are actually in are stuff like Casualty and obviously, like, Emmerdale. And I kind of would count like, Coronation Street, because that's, like, sort of a more regional accent or whatever. But then you get this reputation for those kind of actors not being as good because they're, like, soap opera actors. But unfortunately, those are the parts
Well, also,
actors,
it's almost like an acting apartheid. You know, black people often used to complain that you only ever saw black people in dramas if it was a problem. You know, if it was a problem with racism or a problem with drugs or
a massive problem. You know, you don't really have very many films where it's not a story about being black, you know what I mean? Like, rather than...
Well, it's the same with work, because in the 60s, because a lot of films were made then that were about the problems of the working classes, you know, I'm thinking like A Kind of Loving
This Sporting Life.
And you
know, in a way... Educating Rita.
Educating Rita was another one. And there was the film Alfie, of course, where it was all Cockney accents.
Yeah.
So if you had a Cockney accent or a Northern accent, you were great. There were loads and loads of movies. And it just seems, I don't know whether it's Richard Curtis's fault or whatever, but it seems there's a certain type of British film.
Yeah.
I feel like
when they put Northern actors and stuff, the story is like specifically Northern. It's about mining towns or it's about made in Dagenham or whatever. But like, it would be nice to see more regional accents in just normal films.
Anyway, I'll tell you what Edward Kemp of RADA said. He said, a lot of the British films that are successful on that international scale purvey a particular view of the UK and of England particularly that tends towards the middle class and upper middle class, in which case actors who come from that background are more likely to get the parts. The Crown, he said...
pretty middle class, so, you know, it's not...
I know, but it's the accent. The Crown, made for an international Netflix audience, cast privately educated actors as the Queen, Prince Philip, Princess Margaret and Prince Charles. The only exception is Erin Doherty, who plays Princess Anne, who said she spent most of her childhood happily hanging around in Croydon wearing a tracksuit. And it's the same with His Dark Materials. Will Keen
I've
not watched that. Well, you're not watching TV, are you?
Which is good.
Benedict Cumberbatch, who attended £13,000, £925 a term Harrow School.
Wow.
Is there
three terms? So it's like... 40 grand a year. Bloody hell.
Has complained about class typing in the film industry. Being a posh actor in England, you can't escape class typing from whatever side you look at it. And I recently saw Benedict Cumberbatch in 1917, which you must
see. Oh, I really want to see that, yeah.
Fantastic. But I saw Benedict Cumberbatch, where, interestingly, if we played an officer, obviously. And Lawrence Fox, as I say, is getting a lot of heat for being posh. Which I think
it's a shame that you can't play.
I think Edward Kemp is absolutely right, though. It's a trend. What goes around comes around. In the 60s, the trend was for, you know, Alan Bates.
What is the name of those types of films?
Oh, kitchen sink dramas.
Yeah. They'll probably come back around, but I think in terms of theatre at the moment, there's quite a trend of gritty theatre or whatever. So well,
yes, and Maxine Peake is playing all the parts.
Yes, that is the other thing, is they find one actor and they're like, so like Jodie Comer, she's been cast in loads of stuff. She's Sir Liverpool, Sir Scouse or whatever, and not classically trained or whatever. And now she'll just be put in absolutely everything. So they just decide which regional actor they want.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Bit of music?
Yes, absolutely.
Let's start with yours. I rather like yours this week.
Yeah, I know. You even told me you liked it before when I messaged you it. It was quite exciting.
It was. It was a nice tune. Let's play it.
Baby really hurt me, crying in the taxi. He don't want to know me, says he made the big mistake of dancing in my storm. Says it was poison, so I guess I'll go home into the arms of the girl that I love, the only love I haven't screwed up. She's so hard to please, but she's a forest fire. I do my best to meet her.
Well, that's Lord and Liability.
That was Lord and Liability.
I tell you what I like about it. It's like a rap, isn't it? You could imagine that as a rap as opposed to a song.
What do you mean?
What I mean is the rhyme sequence is very similar to what rappers do.
Anyway, so I'll tell you a bit about Lord. She's born Ella Yellick O'Connor in 1996 in Takapuna, New Zealand. I made the mistake of saying she was American earlier, but she's not. She's from New Zealand. She was very young. She said, you probably have heard of her song Royals, which was her most famous one. And she released the full album in the album that has Royals on it, in 2013 when she was, like 17 or something. But she wrote a lot of the songs when she was like 15. So she's a bit of a, what is the word? Not a child genius.
Prodigy.
So she's a bit of a prodigy. But this is from her album Melodrama, which came out in 2017. And so I'm quite late to the party or whatever, but I just started listening to the whole album over Christmas, and it's so brilliant, like really quite wonderful.
And brilliant from a young age. So she was 16 when she first broke through, yeah?
Yeah, I think she was about 15 when she first broke through with some stuff, and then 16, 17 when she had her first big hit album and stuff and hit song. Yeah, so
one of my favourite comedians is a guy called George Miller, who does a gag where he says his mum was always trying to demean him. She said to me one day, Mozart wrote his first symphony at the age of 17. He says, at the age of 17, I was in McDonald's. Do you want lids on those? I love him. Well, let's play mine now. Yours from somebody very young. Mine's from somebody quite old.
Quite dead, probably.
No, still with us, I'm delighted and thrilled to say.
Don't get too tired.
Recognise the voice?
Yeah, but I couldn't tell you who it is.
Really? It's Paul McCartney.
Yeah, that's what I thought, but I didn't want to say it and sound stupid.
No, it is Paul McCartney. And the reason I played that is somebody put on Twitter, that's called Goodnight Tonight, and it was made by Wings, Paul McCartney's band after the Beatles, in 1979. And the reason I played that is that somebody put on Twitter, if Paul McCartney had never been in the Beatles, we'd still remember him for songs like that. And I just thought it's so true. There are so many good songs that Wings did.
That's ridiculous, though, because
well, yes,
how could you ever think Oh, Paul McCartney, very good in Wings.
But he was. It's so good. And what everybody... The thing about Paul McCartney is obviously he played bass guitar in the Beatles. And that particular song, Goodnight Tonight, everybody goes on about the bass track in it. And it is really, really very funky. And you would never think Paul McCartney as a funky artiste. And Linda McCartney's on that as well. If you look at the... it's quite moving, really, because you look at the... She sang harmony with Wings. A lot of she had a bad reputation as not being a great singer, but she's pretty good on that. And I just thought it'd be good to fish that out, especially because our friend Matt, who you know oversees what we do here on the podcast,
what we do here,
yeah, he's overseeing it. Tells me this week, because you were talking about not being vegan last week. We talked about why you'd sort of not become vegan. One, because your mum brought you a big block of cheese, so it would have been a bit of a waste.
And guess what else I've just bought today?
Well, we'll talk about that in a sec. But also that you got in drunk and had some fish fingers.
Yeah, and I thought, you know, what's the point now?
What's the point? Matt tells me you can now get Linda McCartney fish fingers.
Yeah.
So, well, so that's
I could do it again. Something. I could do February.
Yeah.
Vieffubre,
yeah.
It's not quite as catchy, is it?
Not really. Mm. Should we read some emails?
Yeah, let's.
Okay, Stuart Payne says, hi, Ruthie and Martin. Love the podcast.
Thanks
Hi, Stuart. Thanks for doing it. Oh, and he also likes reading my tweets about my train travel. He says, I'm a York grad. And aww, it's lovely being reminded of my time there, hearing Ruthie's experience at York. A question for Ruthie. You might disagree with this. This is his question for you. He says, you must surely be becoming a bit of an on-campus celeb.
Oh, my God. Absolutely not.
Do people make the connection? Well, you have got a few people that listen, haven't you?
Yeah, but only, like, my actual close friends. Like, right. No one else.
I wonder if there's somebody
else. There was one person who messaged me over the Christmas holidays and said, is this you? Because their, like, dad's friend or something had said, oh, this girl who goes to York Uni or whatever. That is literally the only time that that's ever happened to me in years. Mm. Well, not years, but...
Okay. Well, he says also...
No,
just,
no.
Just,
I wish.
Oh, fair enough. And I'm sure you will become more and more famous. I'm sure you will.
Oh, I don't know about that. I don't think I like that.
Well, he says you don't just want to be too famous. You don't want to be as famous as Billie Eilish or anything like that. But if you're just a little bit famous, it's quite good.
When I lay in bed awake and I'm thinking about all the things I'm worried about, being as famous as Billie Eilish is not my number one worry.
Isn't it? It's not your ambition to become as famous as Billie Eilish.
It's definitely not my ambition, but it also doesn't give me sleepless nights.
No, good. Anyway, he says also, just to say, of all the massive charms of York, he says, I'm really jealous. I miss it loads. Is the Brown's sausage sandwich best in the world? But of course...
I don't know. I've never even heard anyone speak of that, so...
Yeah, well, ask around.
I'll ask around,
Brown's,
yeah.
If it's still going. And he really enjoys the podcast, that's good. Richard Alban wrote and says, Martin, when asking Ruthie about different terms used by today's youth, remember we were doing youth slang last week, I was disappointed you didn't ask if they still said chuffing Nora. Chuffing Nora is a Sheffield expression. Older people in Sheffield will say chuffing Nora, but I can't imagine anybody under the age of about 50 saying chuffing Nora.
Anyway, I don't think so.
No, there you go. That's your answer to that, Richard. Steve Hurst says, Ruthie is right.
Brilliant. End of email.
Exclamation point. I'm 60 years old, and I can see the vitriol thrown against Meghan Markle is based on her ethnicity. Piers Morgan, Jean Moore, don't know her, Katie Hopkins need calling out for the scum that they are, he says. And Ruthie...
I do think Katie Hopkins is scum.
Ruthie, if you're sexually assaulted on campus, God forbid, surely your first call should be the police and not a campus hotline. This is the other thing we were talking about last week.
Yeah, I understand where he's coming from. And, like, one of the things is, like, they would often catch more, especially, like, rapists, if people went to the police straight away because they've got kits where they can take from under your nails and photograph you and stuff. But then, like, it's also... I think one of the problems with that crime is it's an emotional thing as well, isn't it? And personally, I think if it did ever happen to me, the first thing I would want to do is not be photographed by the police and recount the whole thing to them.
So you need to ring both, really.
You need to ring both. And then they could refer you to the police and support you through that or whatever. But I wouldn't want to be speaking to the police right away like that. I don't think I would. I don't know.
You don't know, do you?
You wouldn't know until you know, and hopefully I never will. Yeah. But I think it is one of those things where, like, yes, the most pragmatic and sensible thing to do in order to catch a person would be to speak to the police, but that really what you're going to want in that situation? I'm not sure.
Okay. Andrew Hewison says, hi, Martin and Ruth. I just wanted to express how happy it made me to come across your podcast on talk radio. So he's hearing the bits in the middle of the night. He says, I've lived in Dubai for the past few years. And as you can imagine, I sometimes miss home, which is Whitby. Have you been to Whitby?
Yeah, I've been to Whitby. Only a couple of times. You've never been?
No.
They took us when we were in primary school. It was a great day out. Got fish and chips.
Excellent. So a few months back, I came across your show at the weekend when I was getting up, 4 hours difference. So he was actually ahead of us and was getting up with the breakfast show there in Dubai. I immediately thought to myself, I recognise that voice. He used to listen to me years and years ago. It's comforting and reassuring to listen to you. Now I'm into your podcast with Ruth. I'll always listen to it. One more listener.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Always listen to it. Ruth really reminds me of my niece, who's similar age and has the same interesting political views. Ruth, I love listening to you, but tend to respectfully disagree with some of your views on life. You're very single-minded, which is great, but be careful not to become blinded by your far left and inexperienced views.
I don't think I'm that single-minded.
I don't think you're that far left. I wouldn't have called you far left at all.
I'm pretty left, but I'm not. I'm not as left as some people my age.
No, and you're if you weren't left when you're at university, I'd be shocked, really. Yeah. I mean, if you,
I'm not quite as radical as a lot of people. I think,
no,
especially in like terms of like feminism and stuff like that.
But you come across people with, I mean, most of
a lot. There's a lot of conservatives.
Really?
At uni, yeah.
Really? That's unusual.
The Tory Society's really big.
Really?
They were all out in tuxedos the other night. It's quite cringy.
Why were they out in tuxedos?
It was their, like, formal night or whatever. But
right.
I've not got the great stories because, to be honest, my course is quite, everyone's fairly normal and stuff because it's that kind of course. But the people who do, I've got a friend who does politics, she told the best story. They had to do this thing. I'm stealing her story completely, but it's brilliant. But so she, I can't remember it entirely, but she said that they had to do this thing where they were discussing what makes a great speaker in politics and stuff. And they had to, like, discussing partners, and then the seminar leader was, like, walking around and speaking to them and stuff. And so he goes, actually, I think a great example of a wonderful orator is Rory Stewart, who I actually had the pleasure of meeting. And you're like, oh, imagine saying something like that. Yes, who I had the pleasure of meeting in the summer. And I just thought he had a really brilliant way, an engaging way of speaking with people. Another one who I really like, who I've not yet met, is a Michael Gove or whatever. And he's saying that. And then the seminar leader comes over and they're like, what are you speaking about or whatever? And he says, well, Rory Stewart, who I had the pleasure of meeting, I think is a great example of an orator. And then the seminar leader just goes, yeah, I mean, I'm not sure whether he is that great of a speaker. And also, I guess he just cares a little bit less about poor people than the rest of us, and then just leaves, which I think is brilliant from the seminar leader. But yeah, there are quite a lot of people who are quite right. Just whatever you are, probably at uni, you're quite like
an exaggerated version of it.
Yeah, probably than you will be in 20, 30 years, I guess.
Keep your Leeds accent, because when you were putting on a posh accent there, it just doesn't sound right.
Doesn't sound right?
No.
I can't even do it, really.
No. Good. Anyway, that's Andrew Hewison, bless him, who's listening in Dubai.
Hope I'm not offending anyone if you do like Rory Stewart.
And that's the answer. If you do want to email us, it's martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com.
Yes, that's martinandruthpodcast, all one word, @gmail.com.
It certainly is. It's martinandruthpodcast.
Oh, my gosh.
No, I'm not going to do it again.
No. We were playing University of York Monopoly the other day.
Ah, yes.
Very nerdy. We'd been out a hell of a lot last week and done a lot of drinking. I think everyone very much needed a playing Monopoly kind of night. And so we didn't have it. So we went and bought it, and it's just an absolutely normal Monopoly, apart from everything's like different things on campus and the campus cafes and the library and whatever that you can buy. And then the community chances and chess are all university themed, so there's stuff like you volunteer at an open day, collect £10, or your student loan matures, like collect £100, and then on the properties instead of houses and hotels. It's seminar rooms and lecture theatres, stuff like that. Very, quite cringy, but it's quite good.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of themed Monopoly.
I much prefer the classic Monopoly, to be honest.
Yeah, so do I.
Did you ever play Monopoly with cards, though? That was quite fun. I played it at a friend's house once. Like debit cards, and then you actually have to put the... put your PIN number in.
We talked about that, I think,
and
didn't
stuff.
We? When we were talking about cashless society.
Cashless society.
Yeah, so it's cashless Monopoly.
Cashless Monopoly, yeah. But anyway, it was quite fun.
Well, it's interesting you say that, Ruth, because there's feminist Monopoly.
Feminist Monopoly?
Feminist Monopoly.
I didn't realise that there was anything inherently unfeminist about classic Monopoly.
No, you see, you're obviously behind the times. Monopoly has always been a game that encapsulates best the fact that life is not fair. Regardless of tactics, whoever is lucky enough to land on Mayfair or Park Lane usually wins. That was an interesting point. What were the equivalents of Mayfair and Park Lane in your union?
King's Manor, which is the building which is in town that archaeology gets taught at, and Heslington Hall, which is the old building that you graduate at.
Right. Anyway, it says here, you're not agreeing with whoever lands on Mayfair or Park Lane usually wins.
No, it just depends. I think if you land on them really early and you've still got a lot of money and you've got the set, then that can be good. But personally, I think the oranges are brilliant.
Me too. Yeah, I think you want to go for the Vine Street set and the four stations is what I say.
In University of York Monopoly, they are four campus eateries.
Anyway, a new version of this most divisive board game offers certain players a corrective to one of life's bigger injustices, the gender pay gap. Ms. Monopoly, it's known as Ms. Monopoly.
I always imagine the Monopoly man as kind of genderless.
Well, me too. Ms. Monopoly provides female competitors with a bigger starting cash pile.
That's ridiculous.
And more money for passing go. According to the manufacturers, Hasbro, Ms. Monopoly is the first game to recognise and celebrate the many contributions women have made to our society. The cover features a female entrepreneur holding a coffee cup emblazoned with Boss.
God, it's so patronising. Yeah,
the most sought-after real estate spots on the board, formerly known as Park Lane and Mayfair, have been rebranded as Stem Cell Isolation and Chocolate Chip Cookies. The cookies were invented by Ruth Wakefield in 1930.
Oh, my God!
Yeah, one of our own. The cookies were invented by Ruth Wakefield in 1930.
Is that not the best... Sorry, I literally cannot focus about... I can't even think about feminism, because is that not the best name you've ever heard?
Ruth Wakefield.
I also... one of my friends was telling me a story. They went to Italy over the Christmas.
You are Ruth Wakefield.
I am Ruth Wakefield. I invented the chocolate chip cookie. I do really like them as well. Wow. Mm. Anyways, she went... to Italy, and she like had messaged me told me when she got back, she was like, I couldn't wait to tell you, because you know how I go on about how I'm from Leeds literally all the time.
Yeah.
And she
you're famous for it.
In Italy there was a maid or something, and her name was Leeds. And what a brilliant name.
Anyway, the cookies were invented by Ruth Wakefield in 1930, while Anne Tsukamoto has received patents for her work with stem cells, which has revolutionised cancer treatment. So those are the two prime properties there. The biggest playing advantage comes from the bank, with 1,900 given to female players at the beginning, compared with 1,500 for men.
It's stupid. It's patronising.
It's ridiculous.
It puts women back. I hate stuff like that as well. Like, I hate when it's like they make stuff that like panders to women.
Yeah.
It just really annoys me.
Well, I'm glad you agree with me, because I take that view on the BBC and the fact that somebody who's doing roughly the same job as you probably... Have you been following this case? I don't suppose you have,
no,
actually.
No,
it wouldn't concern you. There's a Samira Ahmed, who you've probably seen on...
I have heard of her.
Yeah, she was in a reality show or something. I think she may have been in an Apprentice.
Yes, I know. I have seen the story floating around. I haven't read up on it, though.
No, it's nothing much to read up on. I mean, basically, she was doing a show where she read out the letters people have complained about the BBC. It was a perfectly decent show, but it was not a very high profile. It was on a sort of early Saturday morning. I used to watch it occasionally. And people would complain about the way the BBC had handled certain news stories. She would bring in the news editor of the BBC and hold them to account. That was basically the programme.
It's a good idea for a programme, yeah.
Yeah, she did it very well. But it was never never a sort of mass entertainment programme. Mm. And she was
makes
being,
sense. It's not. No, it's not precisely. Something everyone's like. Oh, news editors, you
precisely,
know.
Precisely, precisely.
It's niche.
And she got about 400 quid for doing that, which seemed to me to be, you know, worth 400 quid was of anybody's money. It was a decent show. Mm. But Jeremy Vine, who, of course, is well known and is a man, as you'll have noticed, he was doing a sort of similar show, but it was more entertainment-based and it was on a more sort of entertainment type, and he's quite famous. And he was being paid something like 10 times as much as she was.
He doesn't deserve that amount of money, but not because she gets that. No, you know what I mean?
And she's now claiming some fee like, you know, which fair dues. She'd been advised by somebody and she's claiming a back payment of £700,000
or
something.
Oh, my God.
Which is patently ridiculous. And to me, when it goes to the tribunal, I mean, it's been to the tribunal, the BBC should just send someone in there like the laughing policeman or one of those...
I don't know about that.
One of those dolls that laughs that you see
at the
seaside.
Shouldn't laugh at someone.
Well, it's not laughing at her, it's just laughing at the whole concept that in the entertainment industry, you can...
Jeremy Vine probably is not worth £4,000.
No, I mean, definitely not worth 10 times more than she gets, or it might even be 20 times more. But anyway, the whole case is ridiculous. But I'm glad you agree with me.
On the monopoly.
On the monopoly. Yeah. But on terms that that's not really the way to go.
No, I don't think so.
To achieve equality.
There's bigger fish to fry. Right, would you like a your fashion?
While you're looking for a your fashion, did you read the story that they're thinking of moving the House of Lords to your?
Yes, I did. There's a lot of funny like memes and stuff, like tweets and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I've got three things, Dad, for you. I've got a your fashion, a tweet, and a your crush.
Oh.
So I'll start with the your crush because I think it's the worst one. So, Kay. You disappointed me last term, but for some reason I can't stop thinking about you. I'm willing to stand outside in the cold for an hour and a half just to see you a few times a week. You take all my money, but can't wait for you tonight.
I presume he's playing some sport. That's why she's standing out in the cold for an hour and a half.
No, I think they're standing outside a bus stop or something.
Well, it's an hour and a half. It's a very specific time and it's exact.
Yeah, I read it as a boy sending one to a girl, but maybe you're right. Maybe it's a girl sending one to a boy and they're watching. Yeah.
It's just the letter K.
You take all my money though. Yeah, it's just the letter K. So, mystery.
I think he's a jock of some sort.
But then the you take all my money thing more sounds like it's a boy writing one to a girl.
Possibly.
Anyway. This is the your fashion. So, shout out to everyone who played D&B in Langwith, one of the colleges.
What's D&B?
Drum and Bass.
Oh, Drum and Bass. Yeah,
yeah. D&B in Langwith.
Am I supposed to know D&B?
Yeah.
Drum and Bass.
Yeah, let me double check that. That definitely is what it means.
Yeah, I'm sure it does. To me, it sounded like a store, like H&M or M&S.
No. It's D&B. Drum and Bass.
Yeah, I know B&B, Bed and Breakfast.
Right, so it says, shout out to everyone who played D&B in Langwith, one of the colleges, until like 2 a.m. last night. Nothing better conveys the image of youthful partying spirit than playing the same terrible song on repeat on a bench outside your kitchen on a Tuesday morning.
Very good.
And then finally, this is a tweet that I thought was really funny. How to save money at uni, a thread, colon, and then you have to click to expand more, and it just says, die. Well, I think it's fairly accurate.
Yes, absolutely.
It's really the only way to really save money, isn't it?
It is. It's absolutely. And Woody Allen, and you know how much I admire Woody Allen, he said, death can be very distressing, but it's a very good way of cutting down on your expenses.
Yeah. There you go. On that cheery note,
if you do want to get in touch with us, I'll just do it one more time. It's Martin, because it does help us when you know, we get feedback on what we're doing. It's martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com.
martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com. And if you do want to listen to our song choices from this week in full, then go over to Spotify and type in Ruthie, Uni Dad and Me, or Ruthie, Me and My Dad, or Ruthie and Martin and Martin and Ruth podcast or something, and you will find the Spotify playlist with this week's songs and all the other songs from all the other weeks.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.